Well, if you talk to anybody, they'll tell you that Chicago has a bright future because of its natural resources, namely fresh water. So when other areas of the world are hit with drought or water shortages, we in the Midwest, we rest easy, thanks to the Great Lakes. But with all that being said, do we manage our water supply well? I mean, that's a different story, and one that could have consequences for the future. In studio tonight, we continue our series with the Metropolitan Planning Council, investigating and exploring the big ticket items of our time. Tonight, water. Our supply, as well as what to do when what happened earlier this summer along the Fox and Des Plaines Rivers happened again. Danielle Gallet is with the MPC, and she is a water resource strategist and urban planner. Danielle, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this. What you just mentioned to me in the break was the myth of abundance. What is the myth of abundance?
So it's something that I get to contend with every day. I get to work on water, and I geek out about it, and it's so much fun. And my cohorts that probably work in California and Atlanta and other places of the country, they oftentimes have the opportunity to not have to make the case for why we need to attend to our water resources.
Right.
Here, I'm up against that myth of abundance. We could, Justin, you and I could walk down, take 2 minutes to be down on the shores of one of the greatest lakes and the Great Lakes system in the world, 22% of our world's available fresh water. So when we look out on that vista, which is absolutely incredible and an amazing resource, we think, what's the problem? Why is this person talking about drinking water and what we need to attend to? And what's interesting is that in northeastern Illinois, about 20% of our population is actually not on Lake Michigan water.
Hmm.
They get their water from groundwater,
right,
or other surface water. And the latest projections for those models is that we are pumping our water supply out of those aquifers at twice the sustainable rate. And they're predicting about 15 years, many of those wells will not be usable. Now, this is a very real concern.
I was going to say, that's a problem that's all over the country. And you would just assume, like you said, the abundance myth that it's not a problem here in Illinois because we're right next to Lake Michigan. But yeah, I mean, I knew it growing up in Wonder Lake, Illinois. It was well water. It's always been that way. But the idea that we're two times the rate that's sustainable, that's a concern. What can be done about that? Is it obviously conserving water and trying to do things that will ration is one way to go about it? But how do you deal with two times the level of sustainability?
We need to look for other sources. So absolutely, you hit the nail on the head as far as we need to be doing better demand management and using that water that we do have more smartly. But there's also the opportunity that in those areas we have riverways flowing right through them, whether that's the Fox River,
yeah,
the Kankakee River, being able to tap into those resources as appropriate for those communities. But it's one big puzzle piece of which communities should come off groundwater, which ones should stay on, how do we do that? And so it's a complex
level. Ultimately, who makes that call? I mean, is that a government issue? Is that something where the state of Illinois says, okay, we're going to be the ones that put the task force together to deal with what's going to happen in 15 years?
I think that's one opportunity for the state to step up and fund regional water supply planning so that communities can come together. We do have an organization called the Northwest Water Planning Alliance that's focused in that region specifically on this issue. So it brought together three counties, over 80 municipalities, and they're working out these issues together, which is a great sign. But we have a long way to go. What's interesting is that we have over 400 water supply utilities operating in northeastern Illinois alone. Nationally, we have over 151,000. And so being able to bring elected officials who essentially are running those water utilities by virtue of the fact that they're choosing what the rate structures are, what kind of asset management we're running, we need to make sure that those folks, when they come into their civic office, oftentimes they do not have a background in,
right,
running a
or
water
they don't,
utility.
Yeah, they don't think about it at all.
So how do we give them a leg
That's
up?
That's fascinating. It's fascinating to me because I think you have to make sure that in a world in which we have resource-strapped governments, municipalities, and we were hearing about this in the state,
yes,
of Illinois for the last 3 years, on top of the fact that because you have this abundance myth, that the actual consumers of the water, the people who are using the water, they don't think there's an issue. So how? I mean, there's a awareness, there's a resource, there's a lot of different pieces that have to fit together that people are just not thinking about.
Right. Exactly. Eesh. So. For our part, it's a great complex problem to have,
yeah,
right? But there's great opportunity. And so talking about this myth of abundance is really important. We talked about Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, when we're looking out on that lake, it's not in the state of Illinois an unending well either of water supply. Because we reverse the river and the river now flows out of the lake, not into it, we have a U.S. Supreme Court decree that limits the amount of water we can pull from Lake Michigan. So what that means is that it is not an unending well to bring all of those other communities online. When we have a particularly wet weather year, our allotment of Lake Michigan water for the state of Illinois can hit anywhere between 75 to 80% of usage. And so it's not just a game of getting everybody on Lake Michigan water, not only because there's probably not enough, but also because the economic cost of building out that infrastructure and the energy cost is completely prohibitive.
Is this the kind of thing where, there has to be a state of emergency? Do people have to say, okay, I live in any of the northwest or northeastern areas of Illinois, and it doesn't really affect me until there is a state of emergency, until there's an orange sticker on my well wall that says you can't use this today and you can't use it tomorrow, or what we saw maybe, and even what's happened in Flint, Michigan, and other places, where is that the only way that's going to sort of sound the alarm, the bell that we are having water supply issues?
I don't believe so. We're already seeing popping and movement forward. There are communities out in that groundwater area that are starting to work together to look at service sharing together, to go on to a different supply. We're starting to see elected officials become more and more educated. And MPC is doing its part. We're releasing a drinking water 1-2-3 guide for elected officials, which is going to be a free resource that really ramps them up and gets them educated about the issues, what is important, and what actions to take.
So let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and I want to come back. I want to talk about some of the things that are in play, infrastructure, especially in the Chicago area. I was just reading and watching your presentation today. Water pipes are a big problem. Water leaks in Chicago. We lose so much water because our infrastructure is just in disrepair. We'll talk all about that. Danielle Gallet is in studio. She is with the Metropolitan Planning Council and is a water resource strategist and urban planner. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. Stay with us. It's Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking about our water supply tonight. And we've been doing this series for a while, our How to Improve segment with the Metropolitan Planning Council. In studio tonight, Danielle Gallet, and she's with the Metropolitan Planning Council, and she's a water resource strategist and urban planner. Danielle, I want to just go back, because right before the break you talked about when it's a particularly wet season, we actually have less water to deal with. And I wanted to say something. I had a head scratcher because I'm not someone who pays that much attention to water supply and issues of water. But when I think we have a season like we did this summer where it rained all the time, that's good. We have plenty of water, but not the case.
Yeah, it's a little bit more complicated than that. So as part of our allotment of Lake Michigan water, all of the rainwater that falls in our area is naturally pumped to our wastewater treatment, and so it goes out through the river system away from the lake, which means that it also counts and goes against our accounting for how much water we can actually pull for drinking water from Lake Michigan. So the more precipitation we have, and certainly climate change is going to bring on some of those issues, the less we actually have for drinking water to pull from the lake.
Silver lining in that is that it's a Supreme Court decree. At some point, human beings can change how much water we pull out of Lake Michigan. I'm not saying it's politically easy to do, but human beings can make that change, right?
I would say anything is possible. You're probably going to want to talk to the other seven governors in the Great Lakes states and two provinces in Canada.
All right, there we go. All right, let's talk about infrastructure. This is the part where you get a big smile on your face because you like to talk about water infrastructure. I geeked out a little bit just in some of the startling information that I was reading today about just our water pipes in the Chicago area. I mean, they are. You had a great line that said that the pipes that are put in with our grandparents or great parents, and we have to pay the bill. Like, it's time to change the infrastructure in the city, yet I don't know how you do it. I mean, we're talking miles and miles and miles of pipes and water pipes and not a lot of money in the budget the last time I looked to upgrade.
Yeah, so you talk about miles and miles of pipe. Here in North America, we have over 1 million miles of pipe running beneath our feet, beneath our streets, bringing us water 24/7 to our schools, to our businesses, to our homes, as much as we want, for as long as we want. And I actually did the math, and I'm not that great at math, so I had somebody else also do the math, and it came out right that 1 million miles could wrap around planet Earth 40 times.
Wow.
That's how much pipe there is, and the massive
just in North America.
Just in North America. Uh-oh. There is to that we have that brings us the luxury and that brings us the service of drinking water to right to our tap. It's incredible.
That's incredible. That's an astounding number. And of course, if you're going to wrap, let's say 40 times, 40 times around the planet, I would assume at one point or another, there's going to be area of that pipe that needs to be upgraded, that it leaks. And so you mentioned in one of the pieces that some of the pipes are still wooden in the area.
Like, we actually, in our offices, we have a chunk of pipe that was taken out not too long ago that was actually a wooden pipe. And it's interesting because those wooden pipes have actually lasted longer than some of the metal types that we put in post-World War II in some of our communities.
Now, we'll hear, and we've talked about this on the program as well, I mean, with the lead issue in water, and we kind of saw that in some municipalities, and we see it happening in the city of Chicago in some neighborhoods. Besides that problem, the problem of lead in the water, the bigger issue is leakage. The yes. idea that these are old pipes and different places, there are holes in the pipes, and we're losing valuable drinking water.
Yeah. So I think we can all agree that it makes very little sense to acquire, treat, pump, and then lose 30, sometimes 40% of a product in the supply chain. So there's something to tackle there. But the first step is understanding what the condition of this infrastructure is. All of those 400 water supply utilities that I mentioned we have need to be doing their annual audits of condition of the infrastructure. We need to get a handle on what is the actual leakage, because right now, a lot of us are doing back-of-the-envelope calculations. So the quicker we can get an understanding of what the condition of the infrastructure is, mm-hmm. the smarter we can be about how to do cost-effective, full-boat infrastructure replacement.
When we get to the political side, you get even at the federal government, the president talks about big infrastructure plans. You have the mayor talks about infrastructure and the water department wants to upgrade. But it costs money to be able to do these things. Where is infrastructure upgrades, especially when it comes to our drinking water, on the priority list when it comes to a budget in a big city like Chicago?
Well, I can't speak directly for Chicago, but I can say for many communities, it tends to fall off the list. I constantly encourage my fellow colleagues that work in the water industry, those public works officials, when they're going up to those annual budget meetings at their local municipality, that they really take a stand and really demonstrate what the condition of the infrastructure is, what the revenue loss is on that, and start to have a really powerful discourse with their elected officials to really bring that to light. That these services are life critical for our communities, just like police and fire.
Right.
We have operators on the line every day running those water utilities, making sure that we have safe water.
That's amazing to hear. And, back to the point I made at the beginning, it is interesting because, as you said, we have to start thinking about other options for water supply. And, it can't be groundwater. Maybe it's lake water. There's other places. But one area that I think is interesting is stormwater. Mm-hmm. In the way that the circular economy and this concept of being able to come up with a green infrastructure to essentially treat stormwater and be able to use the water for drinking, for other issues, whatever it might be. But the idea of finding new technologies to find new water sources, is that on the table? Or is not unlike what we talk about renewable energy sources? Are there renewable water sources on the table?
So how I would word that is that water reuse. So we have the same amount of water on planet Earth we've always had. We don't get to create more water. But we can think about how we use what type of water to a better use. So, for instance, it's very interesting that we continue to use potable water, which is US EPA-treated water, drinking water, to flush our toilets.
Hmm.
Is that necessary? Maybe not.
For the dog. The dog's going to love it. But you're right.
All right, you're right. Absolutely, for the pets, we need to watch out for them too.
But you're right. So that's drinking water is the same source as being used for toilets.
And I would say the same source is being used to irrigate lawns.
Interesting.
That'll be an interesting
one. So there's where you're right. You're absolutely. I see where you're going. This idea that it's possible if we could figure out different distinctions or quality levels of water and be able to use reusable water for lawns or for toilets and be able to save the drinking water for drinking, for
Absolutely.
Humans consumption.
Absolutely. And not only all around the world, but also going beyond just the world, right here in our region, our wastewater and stormwater utilities are starting to consider themselves as opposed to a waste stream where they have nutrients and all of our waste coming to them. And it's kind of, what do you do to just kind of get rid of it, clean it up and get it out of the way? They're seeing it as a resource stream. And how do we utilize the nutrients to create cost-effective fertilizers so it's not going into the effluent and going into our waterways? How do we capture the energy and the heat in those systems to power the treatment of water? And how do we make sure that we're putting in, as you say, green infrastructure, nature-based solutions into communities where we're starting to function better as a sponge, mm-hmm. and we don't just pave over everything?
Last question is just when I think about a lot of the things you just mentioned, I really have to concentrate and focus in because I think that it almost falls in this category like, hey, you know, we're going to save the earth. It almost falls into like an Earth Day quality of content. And I just wonder, at what point do we shift from that and say, no, this isn't sort of something you do if you're just green and you like to save the planet. This is important. This is something that has to be a priority. What goes into that?
I think it's a change in our water ethic and our behavior and patterns, an awareness that water is the elixir of life. We love being near it. We love consuming it. We love being in it. And being present to that every day, 24/7.
Danielle Gallet is she's with the Metropolitan Planning Council. She's also a water resource strategist and an urban planner. She joins us tonight on how to improve our water supply. Danielle, great to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.